We're going to look at things in terms of like the foundation, and then what then we'll build some cool stuff on top of it. So first of all, we've got Visual Studio. Visual Studio, obviously, the editor that you'll use to build and deploy. And I'm going to remind you that Visual Studio is great not just for C-sharp Visual Basic editing, but it's very good for HTML, JavaScript, C-sharp, and CSS, excuse me. NuGet. NuGet is something, who hears, is everyone pretty familiar with NuGet by now? You kind of have to be in order to, like, when you create a new MVC 4 app, a new Web Forms app with Web Forms 4.5, you're going to see down in the status bar a bunch of NuGet packages are actually getting added to your project. So that's the way that things are being delivered to you now is via NuGet. And so it's important to be familiar with NuGet. We'll take a quick look at that. ASP.NET, of course, so great web framework. And also we're going to be looking at Windows Azure. And I just want to, this has been something that I've been really paying attention to as I've been developing lately, is that the whole workflow of being a web developer is about getting things on the web, right? If you write some code on your machine and you hit F5 and it looks neat and then you know that's it, you haven't written a web app. So I want to get you thinking about deploying to Windows Azure as part of your development process. And especially with Windows Azure websites, I love that. I'm going to be showing quickly how to get set up with that in a second. We'll be deploying during the day to Windows Azure because you can get these free Azure websites and just kind of try things out. So yeah, I'm going to go quickly through this because we started a bit late, but Visual Studio, we'll be looking at some great features of that in the next session. Things like great editor support, but also Page Inspector, a lot of neat stuff. NuGet. So the problem that NuGet solves, I want to talk about this at the beginning of the day because at other webcamps, or events like this, we'll start talking, and halfway through the day, questions will come up. What's that NuGet thing really? Because I kind of knew the idea, but what is it really? So the problem NuGet solves is, if you want to pull an assembly or some code or some library, some sort of dependency into your application, that's probably it might be a DLL, right? It might be something like Log4Net. It could be some new DLL that's released by Microsoft. It might be jQuery, right? Just a JavaScript library. So you want to get these things into your app. And normally, how did you do that in the past? You'd go out and search around for it. You'd find a website that you thought was the right one. You'd download a zip file. Maybe copy it into your app. Maybe it's some sort of security problem that was frustrating. And then you'd think, OK, now, but this thing has another dependency and all that kind of thing. So NuGet is a systematic way of handling all that. So what it does for you when you add a NuGet package, that NuGet package has this metadata that's going to say, here is what I require. These are my dependencies. So before I can operate, I need to have these other things. Like jQuery validation may require a specific version of jQuery. So it's going to handle all that dependency checking. Then also, inside of your project, it's going to have a packages.config file. And that's going to list all your NuGet packages that are installed. That's nice because that's human readable. So you can go in and look and say, oh, I didn't know I had that package in there. Another nice thing with NuGet is that you can uninstall. So you can try something out. And that's in the past been something where I said, I'm interested in this thing. I read this cool blog post. But I don't really want to try it out because I don't want to mess up my project. And the idea with NuGet is that it'll cleanly uninstall not just that DLL or files, but also all the dependencies. So it makes it a lot kind of lower risk to try things out. And then finally, NuGet is getting more and more integrated into other parts of development. So I mentioned earlier, like file new project experience is going to use NuGet in those templates, but also things like deploying. You can have package restore and it'll actually deploy and on the server can unpack things. All right, ASP.NET. So the idea with ASP.NET, I don't know if this slide helps or hurts. My goal with this is to show that, there's a lot going on that you'll hear about with ASP.NET. You'll hear, oh, there's MVC, and there's a new release of web pages, and you know ASP.NET 4.5 just came out. Now there's web API, and it's kind of a jumble. But the nice, reassuring thing is that you've got this core that you're building on, this ASP.NET core. So that's the things like membership, security, caching, things that have been there for 10 years. So when I started developing with ASP.NET MVC, I was a little bit worried that I was going to have to relearn everything. And it was helpful to know, oh, this is actually using ASP.NET handlers. It's using all that same kind of stuff under the hood. Finally, okay, so Azure. The nice things that I think are good to know with this, you can use Azure websites for free, no cost. You actually have a spending limit, so it won't spend money without you going in and saying, yes, I would like to spend money. So you can deploy these 10 sites, and I have deployed many, many sites because I'll deploy one, try it out, think it's fun, delete it later, deploy a new one, right? So you can have 10 running sites at a time. And these aren't some kind of weird Azure-y sites. These are like file new web forms project, build for a while, have some, have a local database in there, deploy it, and it all just works. So you don't have to kind of learn all this crazy stuff to put it to use. So what I'd like is, if anyone here would like to walk through some of the demos with us today, I think you'll have more fun if you actually can deploy them as well. So I'm going to walk you quickly through the Azure sign-up process. I'm going to show you how to do that. Who here already has an Azure account? Okay. Here's this. It's a tiny sign-up link I've got at the bottom, aka.ms/webcamps-azure. I forgot the second half of my question a second ago. People that don't have an account, who here doesn't have an Azure account that has an MSDN account? Okay, so you already have all these Azure compute hours. So you've got free Azure websites that you can be using. And that anybody can use that. But if you've got an MSDN account, you've got above and beyond that a lot of other Azure credits that you can use, Azure hours. So you can use those for things like compute hours and stuff like that. So there's actually a huge amount of benefits that are just kind of sitting around that a lot of people aren't using. So I'm going to walk you through the Azure process here. I'm short on time, so I took screenshots of these, but actually last night sitting in my hotel room, I banged through this in a few minutes. So you could probably follow along with me in real time. I took a screenshot here of this Azure spending limit just because this is something that throws people off. As part of the sign-up process, they have you enter a credit card. And that's really so they know who you are. And sure, later you can go in and say, I would like to turn off my spending limit and start spending money. But when you first create an account, this actually, if you bingle for Windows Azure spending limit, you'll see that it says, a new account is created, a new free trial account is created with a zero spending limit. So that means it won't go out and start, running up a credit card bill without you knowing about it. So if you go to that link that I had before, which was aka.ms, I think I can zoom on this. There we go. And okay. So you can follow along. You can bail out at any point if you go, this is crazy, I don't like this. All right, so I went to that link. I click on this free trial button, and it pops up this thing. Now, I selected that I'm from the US, and it showed what my 90-day free trial thing is. You can pick, whatever, Canada, or if you're watching online, Bangladesh, or whatever you'd like. So then you hit the next arrow. Then here it says verify your account. So here you put in a phone number and it'll text you back a verification code. This is again so that they know it's not like a bot running through and creating a million Azure accounts to try and spam somebody or whatever, right? So when I did this last night, I got my text back in about 30 seconds. All right, the next spot here is the billing address screen. So this here, you do need to put in a credit card. I put in my credit card. I actually created a separate, you can create more than one. So I use a different email address and use a credit card I'd already used. I filled this in. And they're not going to charge me anything because of that spending limit. And again, when you're done creating this, you can just delete the account if you want. After that, you'll get a little Knight Rider progress bar. And then I got redirected here. So that's kind of the Azure signup process. After that, you have this. So then when you click on this portal thing, you get this screen. So I partly want to show you this process. You know, even if you're not comfortable going through it, that's fine. But you'll understand what we're showing today when we deploy things. This is this portal screen. And if you can't get to it, it's because you haven't signed up for an account yet. Any questions on that? Yes. The friendly URL, again, operators are standing by. Just a second. Okay, so aka.ms/webcams-azure. We've got that on another slide at the end of the deck, too. All right. Excellent question, sir. Okay, so we've talked through all these kind of frameworks, these building blocks that we use to build upon. And then next we're going to look at a transition I'm pretty proud of and some scenarios we're going to build on top of this. So HTML5 applications, we have a 30-minute mini session on that later. HTTP services, so this is web API, is a way that you can build HTTP services on top of this. Apps for Office. Who here knew that you can build apps for Office using HTML5? Nobody knows this. It's awesome. Brady's going to be showing some really cool demos on this later. When we were going through and preparing all this content, looking at it recently, I was shocked at what you could do with it. We actually threw some crazy HTML5 games in there, which is not at all what you're supposed to do. But we were playing a game inside of Excel. So it's really powerful. And then you start thinking, well, so if I can use HTML5 with JavaScript to control an Excel spreadsheet, what could I do with that? So it's pretty slick. Mobile, we'll be looking at mobile. So Zinyang's going to be showing that later, what you can do with mobile and specifically in MVC. Social apps. So there's a lot of new things that are coming out, even in the fall update, ASP.NET fall update. I'll talk more about that in just a second. But there are some new templates for social applications. So things like Facebook, OpenID sign-on, OpenAuth. And finally, real-time. So Brady's going to be showing some demos of SignalR. Who here has heard a ton of SignalR buzz lately? Right? There's a lot of chatter about SignalR, so we'll be seeing more what that is. And if you haven't heard about it, SignalR is real-time communication between browser and server. So you can do things like push information back and forth. The server can notify the client without the client saying, got anything, the server can just connect directly to the client. So here are some resources. I rushed through this really quick. Sometimes keynotes at an event like this will kind of go on for a while with a lot of bullet points. I really think that we just want to show you a lot of code today. So this is really kind of a quick overview of where we're going. But I think these links are important. So the ASP.NET website should be where you should find all your content about ASP.NET. That's where we get new releases. We put up, on the homepage, we feature community bloggers, just cool stuff that's going on. Within the site, we also have this ASP.NET/vnext. So let's bring that up. If I can type. And it's not on that screen. Okay. So this ASP.NET/vnext. So this is what we've created this so that we're going to keep this up to date. If you ever want to know what's going on with ASP.NET, you go to this vnext page. So if you went here 6 months ago, you would see something different. And I've got a blank screen. There we go. Now, what you'll see is this fall 2012 update. So the idea here is we just shipped ASP.NET 4.5 Visual Studio 2012 in August. And since then, they've been working hard on putting in some other cool features. Like I showed, we have this framework on the bottom and then some cool ideas that we can turn on top of that. So they've been working on building project templates to make it easier to do things. Like you can do file new Facebook application. And so we'll look at that in a bit. But to install that, that's on this page. So this green button here will install the fall update. I would recommend checking this out. And I know a lot of the time, you know, people say, hey, install our new crazy bits and maybe you'll like them. But some nice things with this fall update is it doesn't change any of your core runtime stuff. It doesn't change any of your .NET install, and it doesn't change any of your ASP.NET install. All it does is add new project templates. So these project templates make it so you can say file new project, single page application, or file new project, Facebook application. So it updates your project templates. What that means, in addition to, you know, it's kind of low weight to install and try it out, it actually installed for me in about 5 minutes and uninstalled very quickly too, no reboots required. But it also means that you can create an application without the fall update preview installed, zip up the project, send it to your friend, or you know what I mean? You can work back and forth. You've got it installed, you zip up the project, send it to your friend who just has .NET 4 or 5 installed, and everything works. You don't need to install it on your server to try it out. Any questions on that? Is that clear? It's a little bit different. But it's nice to be able to have these new project templates and not need to install any kind of core software to use them. Actually, funny side story here. When I was about a month ago at Build, the Build conference, I was speaking with Scott Hanselman, and the two of us were presenting on the fall update preview. And we were going through some things. He said, yeah, I'll use my laptop, you use your laptop. And partway through the presentation, we realized that, I'm going to stop right at 9, but thank you. We realized he did not have the fall update preview installed on his computer during the presentation about the fall update preview. So, but he went through and clicked through while I was talking, and he installed it in about 3 minutes. So I recommend that. And then we've got that link down at the bottom again, AKMS Webcams-Azure. That's really it. I blazed through the keynote because we started a little bit late because we had people coming in, and I really don't want... I would prefer to spend less time on this keynote thing and more time on the actual code and demos. Do we have any questions on the stuff I blazed through really, really quickly? No? Yes. Will it be up online? Yes, this is all being recorded. So it will be up online. The plan, I think, is to put it on Channel 9. So, yeah. Yes? Yes. So also in the... we have separate information about dev.office.com, and that's Brady will have that in the resources on your slides too, I think. Okay.
I'm on dev.office.com right now.
All right. So, yes, devcamps.ms. So let me try and zoom again.
Sorry, John.
No problem. Whoop, and I don't even know what I'm doing. That went horribly wrong. devcamps.ms, so www.devcamps.ms. And that's where we have information about the DevCamps stuff, the downloads, and all that. So in addition to this, the videos being up online, we're also going to have content, sample code, and all that stuff. These slides also will be up there. So you, since you're the guinea pig first people that are seeing this, we're actually, you know, this is fresh content. It's not all, we have to go through a big process to get it published. But once it's published, it should be up like this week. Any other questions? All right, then. I'm going to jump right into the next presentation here. Yeah, exactly.
Is that hour?
30.
You guys can just call me Vanna White. I've aged poorly.
All right, computer. So this is a 30-minute session, and we're going to be talking about what's new in ASP.NET 4.5 and also Visual Studio 2012 for web developers. So in this section, I'm going to be showing some things. Who here primarily works in web forms, ASP.NET web forms? There's more than that. There's a lot of people that are working, doing day-to-day work in web forms. I've done a ton of work in web forms. And there's some great new features that I'm going to be showing you that you may not have seen in ASP.NET 4.5 that really, really simplify the code that you write and kind of improve the quality, I think, that you can deliver. So that is nice. We'll be looking also at friendly URLs. And then we're looking at some just web developer features in Visual Studio 2012 as well. And those help a lot with web forms, but they also help with, you know, anything else, MVC or if you're writing handlers or whatever. So I realize this is kind of small. Let me see. The idea here, first we're talking about model binding. So model binding allows or has some new features in 4.5. One of those is strongly typed data controls. So how many times have you mistyped first name in quotes, right? You try to bind to a field in web forms, and if you misspell it, you don't know until you browse to that page and that control is rendered because it's just a string. So what we're doing, I'm going to try and zoom again. We'll see what happens. Yes. I know. So in web forms 4.5, you can declare an item type. So you can say, I'm binding in this control to an item of type customer. And then you can bind directly to properties. So you say item.firstname. And you get IntelliSense. And if you mistype something, you're going to know it. So this is really a huge feature. So that is the first part, which is strongly typed controls. Secondly, when you're getting data, you are no longer having to use on-item data bound or on preload or all those events and then setting things into the control. Instead, you can tell the data control, get your data using this method. So we're going to look at the code for this in a second. And I think it's easier to see both in Visual Studio. I think it'll be easier to read. But also, it's just easier to see in context. But that really kind of changes your model for writing your code and for thinking about your page. You're no longer saying, you're not thinking of this control is making me set these properties and this control has these events. Instead, you're in the control just saying, control, get your data here. And this method doesn't even know anything about that control. It just returns data. So it really kind of flips things around and it lets you kind of decouples things in a very good way. Inserting data. Again, we'll see this in the code, but this gives you the ability to use try update model. So if you've used ASP.NET MVC, when you post a form back, you get a model, and you can say try update model, and the code is able to say, okay, this is a customer object, and the customer has a first name. Well, there's a text box named first name. Those are the same thing. And so what that's doing is it's automatically matching them up for you. And so you don't have to say customer.firstname equals textfirstname.text. And then maybe it doesn't work, or maybe you forget to change one later. So this automatically is going to map all that for you, and it includes validation and everything. So this is being or has been added to web forms in 4.5. So this gives you that same kind of model, and it also lets you write code that doesn't have to depend on control properties. All right. One other thing before we go into the demo is this gives you support for, or this is a new feature in the fall update, is this friendly URLs. So instead of browsing to something, something, something dot ASPX, question mark, ID equals this or that, you can have a URL that looks like /album/edit/1. And it both looks nice in the URL. It's easier to manage. It doesn't kind of, you know, it's just kind of easier to work with. Also, it's mapping. It's actually mapping segments of the URL in. So you can say, all right, I've got a grid that needs to bind to an ID, or I've got a form view that needs an ID. Well, you can just pass /1, and then in your get data method, you can say, go get this from the URL. And the friendly URL thing maps it all together. This, I think, is very hard to see in a slide and hopefully a lot easier to see in code. So let's look at the code. All right, so.
John, I have a question. It's,
yes.
It's my personal question. It's actually not from the chat room.
Okay.
But when you were looking at the setting the select method and the insert method, and you were calling like get customers, does that have to be in the code behind or can it be anywhere? I mean, so can it be unit tested?
You know, I've only seen it in, no, I believe it can be anywhere. But let me see, I think it's going to look, the pattern I've seen for this is it would be in the code behind and call off to a service maybe. Because you know what I'm saying? So your select method would have a, you know, something service.get customers. And that could be in a different assembly or whatever. So, all right, so let's go in here. Good. This is very odd how it has this neat feature. I'm using PowerPoint 2013, and it's somehow, even though I'm copying my monitor, it's showing a different thing on each screen, but it kind of freaks out also. So here we're looking at a sample application that has a few things. First of all, okay, actually let's just run it. So in this application, I wanted to show some information off, and I thought, well, I could, you know, show a list of customers or whatever. Then I thought, well, I've actually got some model data in an application I've worked on before called the MVC Music Store. And it's kind of a tutorial application I work on that you build out a very simple music store. And so I thought, how would this actually work if I just copy my model data, or copy my models and copy some of the stuff into a web forms application, and it actually works out surprisingly well. So here we've got a list of, you know, some albums, and then I'm going to go through and I'll click on one. So here's some information. I will, I guess, turn on internet. Don't ask me now. So here I've got a list, you know, I've got an album, and then I can click on edit, and I can go in and edit. I've got some drop downs, you know, showing genre and artist for an album. So kind of a simple thing, but we have a list, we've got a form with both an edit view and a display view. So now let's take a look at how that's all working. So first of all, we've got a model to define what an album looks like. And this is actually... So a model is just a class. It's a, in this case, a C#, but it could be a VB class. It's a .NET class. And it has just a bunch of properties. So this is my entire album model. So I've got an album ID. Okay. So I've got an album ID and a genre ID. Those are to map, you know, the album ID is the primary key. The genre is, you know, what style of music. And then I've just got a bunch of other things like a title, and a price. And for the price, I've defined some things. So I've said this is a currency, and the range must be between one penny and $100, and it's required. So what's nice with these attributes is that these are actually enforced by the controls. So when I try and edit or update or insert an album, it's going to validate against that. So this is my model. Next, I'm going to look at the list. So if we go to... So this is my list view. And as you'll remember, I said some things before. First of all, we're using strongly typed, strong typing. So here I've said that my model is of type album. So I define that up top, and then below, when I'm binding to it, I say album.title. So there's no quotes here. And in fact, if I hit the dot here, I get IntelliSense on that, right? So I'm not going to accidentally misspell a title. If I later go in and edit my model and change from title to album title or whatever, this is going to show, this will get a red squiggly underneath, right? It's an error. So, and also, this knows that title is of type string. So I can I could say, you know, string dot whatever, and it'll actually do things that are string type IntelliSense. So that's the strong typing. Now, another thing is we need to get data for this. So zooming around, hopefully not making you dizzy. Okay. So I've defined a select method called albumList_getData. So for my list view, I'm saying go get your data from this method. So now let's take a look at that method. So default. So this is it. It's a one-liner. So some important things to notice about this. I'm using Entity Framework. I could be using anything I wanted. I could be just returning an array or whatever. But I'm returning an iQueryable. And because it's an iQueryable, that means that actually the control could have filtering. We could use filtering methods. So we could say just, you know, any control that would support filtering could then turn that on. Could say sort by this or filter by this. If you don't want to do that, if you don't need querying, you could just return an IEnumerable. So there's no kind of special thing you need to do with this. That if you just saw this method, you would not know that it was used to return data to a list view. Also, notice that there's nothing in this tiny method that says anything about my list view dot data source equals blah blah blah. So it's just returning code. And then finally, this looks a lot like, if you've done ASP.NET MVC, this looks a lot like could work in an MVC controller actioner. It's very kind of the same sort of feel to it, right? Controller could return information to a view, whereas this web forms thing can return information to a control. Any questions on that? No questions? Yes.
Yes. Oh, sorry.
I believe it has to be, you know, I'm not sure. I think you could use protected. I think protected. Honestly, I don't know. That's a good question.
John, could you confirm for the chat room, the demos are not available yet, right?
The demos are not available yet. They will be up like this week. We're just going through the process of getting them like officially code signed so that they won't show security errors when you try and run them. But, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So what we've seen so far is strongly typed binding. We've also seen a very simple case of getting data, that select method. So let's look at a slightly more advanced case. Let's look at this album edit page. So this album edit, I'm using a form view. And with a form view, you get a couple of templates. So I've got an edit item template, and I'm using a dropdown. So that dropdown is inside an album, it's inside of a form view, but I want to bind to something. So what do? Again, I use a select method. So here I've got the select method, get genres and get artists. So now let's look at get artists. So I'm populating my dropdowns using, like, get artists is a one-liner that says, go get me my data, my artists and return them as enumerable. So I think this is really kind of powerful. Finally, just really quickly, I want to show you the friendly URL support. So when I'm editing an album, I need an ID to bind to. And this one here. So friendly URL segments. So when I browse to that, I did /album/edit/1. And because I'm using friendly URLs, this friendly URL segments attribute maps whatever is in there to an ID. So it says, I'm looking for an ID, and map it to, in this case, I'm just calling .find, passing that ID in. So the reason, part of the reason I'm mentioning friendly URL, these actually have been available as a NuGet package for a while, but these are being added in this fall update preview to the file new project experience for a web forum.
So. Does that require the 4.5 code, or can that run on 4.0? I know a lot of the stuff that you release is
bipolar
in that sense.
This is based on Smarty URLs, which came out before 4.5, so I'm not certain, really. We'd have to look at the NuGet package. So. So that's really all the time I have for on that, but I think it's just really... I'm not doing production web forms code anymore. I'm not doing really much production code anymore, speaking instead. But I really wish I'd had this in the past, because I ran into a lot of complications trying to map control things and set things up. And it, really, if I'd been able to build with this, it'd be so much easier to keep things kind of simple. All right, let's talk now quickly about another favorite feature of mine, which is bundling and minification. So this is built into new projects. This does not require fall update preview. This is just ASP.NET 4.5 or MVC 4. And these things are available. You can actually install them as NuGet packages and hook them up with previous versions. So the idea is that new modern applications have a lot of dependencies. So a new page will have maybe several CSS references, several JavaScript references, a bunch of images. And so when you request a page, the page may download quickly, but for the browser to render it, it needs to go and get all that stuff. And for each one of those, it can be a separate HTTP request, which can slow down that rendering experience. So what bundling and minification do is, first of all, bundling adds things together. So it says, well, instead of asking, I'm the web server, so browser, instead of asking me for five different JavaScript files, I'm just going to give you one. So behind the scenes, ASP.NET looks at your, these things are called bundles, so it'll look at your bundles you've defined for JavaScript, and it'll say, okay, I've got a, jQuery validation bundle. And it really includes jQuery, jQuery UI, jQuery validation, whatever. And it puts those all into one file. So that's just one request now. Secondly, after it's done that, it's able to minify that. So minification is this process of, I'm proud of this animation, so you've got to pay attention here. Over on the right side. Right. So what it's doing is it's saying, okay, this JavaScript, you had it written in a way that allows you to edit it and to develop with it. But in order to deliver it, your browser doesn't need that. And so it can go through and say, like, shorten up variable names or, compress things. And it actually also does this with CSS. So it'll look into your CSS styles and say, okay, this is a duplicate definition. We only need to send it down once. Or we can use CSS shorthand to, put all these different declarations, we can put them into one little one. So this is actually using this Antler code precompiler, I believe it's called, but it's actually doing an analysis, like a lexical analysis of your code to figure out what exactly it can compress. And this is based on some code used by the MSN team. It's been used by them for a long time under very high scale. And so the ASP.NET team said, hey, can we package this up in a way that, everyone can use? And they said, sure. And I'll show you, actually, if we go into that friendly URLs app. So those friendly URLs, if we go into app start, bundle config, this is where all the bundles for an application are configured. So if you do file new project on MVC4 or web forms, you'll see some bundles defined. So these are things like, WebForms.js. These are all your separate JavaScript things that a WebForms page would normally use. This is one file now, and it's minified. Really useful. You don't need to do anything to start using it, but I'm showing you this bundle.config so that you can go in and define other bundles. You can do quite a bit as far as extending it, or you can just use it, and it'll all work. So... All right. So now we're going to shift over and look at Visual Studio 2012 features for web developers. And this is, I could talk about this for a very long time. There's so much fun stuff in here. So I tried to pick just some of my favorite features in here. We're going to be looking at these four things. A page inspector is a nice way of seeing where, you know, normally if you view source on a page that was generated maybe by ASP.NET Web Forms or MVC, you wouldn't know exactly where a specific div came from, or, you know, a list item or something. Did it come from, you know, the master page, or did it come from a controller or whatever? So Page Inspector solves that problem. A lot of features for CSS, HTML, and JavaScript editing. And finally, I'll show you Web Essentials, which lets you get a very early look at some features as they're rolled out, sometimes several times a month. And is it going to do something? There it is. All that just to say demo. Okay, so we're going to take a look at... Okay, so first of all, Page Inspector. So I'm going to go into a, view in Page Inspector. So what I've done here is I've gone to the home index and right-clicked and said view in Page Inspector. And if you know MVC, that's already kind of smart because it figured out which controller action to run and all that. So now we've got this, and you're saying, John, what are you doing? Because I can't see anything. So let me stop my presentation. You guys are too polite. Somebody should have spoken up there. Okay, so let me go back and show that again. So I'm in an application. I'm right-clicking on a view. This could also be, I could be on a web forms, you know, on a web form item. Right-click and say view in Page Inspector. So what that's done is it's figured out, okay, you right-clicked on a view. That really meant you wanted to view, you know, slash home slash index. Now I can click on this little inspect thing. This is where the magic happens. So I click on this. Once I've clicked on index, inspect, now I'm able to see it's selecting things. So I'll zoom out here. So this is saying, okay, if I click on that, that actually came, it shifted over on the right side from the view I was on to the layout. So this is actually the page header, the cross-site page header. So this will go through and it'll help for something like in a web form where I've got a form view. You know, I may want to, actually, let's, I think I've still got that open. So let's look at, you know, this edit page. So I'll right-click on this and say view in Page Inspector. So this is actually, this is the IE10 engine inside of Visual Studio running. It's actually doing some crazy intelligent stuff behind the scenes to insert some little code so it can map this stuff back and forth. So the controls are saying, hi, I'm this control. And so now when I go in and say, you know, say home, and I say inspect, and I click on something. So this is actually showing which item template this is coming from, right? So, and if I instead, this is in you know, web forms, if I click up on the top, now this is shifting me over to the site master. So this is also interactive. I can go down into the... into here, and I can start changing my CSS, and I can say, you know, change the font size and font family. So I think this is something where I am still working to get myself into the habit of using it enough. I find I'm viewing source, and I'm trying to figure something out, and then I'm like, why am I doing this? There's actually a really good tool for this. So if you don't think about using this often enough, just play with it a bit and get used to it. It's really, really powerful. And again, this isn't like kind of working in a browser. This is actually full IE10, you know, support for all, you know, CSS3 and HTML5. So really, really pretty awesome.
John, will that handle dynamically injected form controls, like using load control? I'm guessing not. I'm guessing it's probably just static ones.
I don't know. Dynamically injected controls are always tricky, so I wouldn't answer for that, even if I thought I knew the answer.
I'm guessing it probably doesn't.
Yeah, I do know that it is doing a lot of things where it is, it is actually executing the code, it's querying my database, it's doing all that. It might work. I don't know. But dynamically injected controls are always, there's so many like gotchas to it. So that is Page Inspector. I also want to show off we also have support for HTML5 inside the HTML editor. So here I'm going to close down my Page Inspector. So you have support for all sorts of things, like, for instance, if I wanted an audio tag. So here I've got an HTML5 snippet. I just typed audio, and nothing happened. Audio and hit tab, and this actually generates out for me an audio tag. And it's, if I type in one and tab to the next, it'll actually, it should update the next. I'm not doing something wrong. There it is. So I updated one MP3, and it said you probably want to call your OGG file the same. So, audio is one example, video. Just things like that. It's actually got the, it's got snippets, but it also has things like IntelliSense and completion for all the modern HTML5 elements. And then we've got in CSS as well, you've got support for, completion using the standards that you've selected, that you've said you're supporting. So that's pretty cool by itself. There's a lot of stuff. There are things that are a little bit more subtle, like we've actually got, you're able to fold these like they're a region. So the idea here is to bring the editor support. Before you had CSS and VB and other .NET languages had this one kind of coding level of support, and then everything else was kind of like more like a text file. And we might try and help you out a little bit, but you're kind of on your own. And really, one of the ideas with Visual Studio 2012 is to elevate that level of editing up to actually JavaScript, CSS, and HTML are code. They're code that you care about, and we can do more for you. So this is all pretty good. Even things like you've got a color picker here. So I forget what the thing is. Goodness. The color support here, if I could remember how to do that. The color support is supposed to show like a color picker there, and I'm typing the wrong thing, but that helps you to select colors that are already used in the same style sheet. So all these kind of standard things you do over and over and over, this helps with that. But I want to show one other thing which I think is really handy, and this is the Web Essentials extension. So Web Essentials allows you to get a look at what the Visual Studio web tooling team is doing. What the Visual Studio web tooling team is doing before they ship, the next update to Visual Studio. So this is actually written by the same people. If you go out to, I'll show it in here first of all. So if you go into this extensions and updates, if you search for Web Essentials 2012, this will pop up. So I actually just have it disabled. Let's restart. What could go wrong? And you can also find this if you search for Visual Studio Gallery Web Essentials. So this is an extension here that adds in quite a bit more. So things like here, this isn't just showing this color picker, but it shows them in line in the page. This allows me to convert different types. I can say on a background color, I could say, I think now, oops. I'm forgetting the thing too early. I need more coffee. But you also get support for things like, so I'm mousing over a font, and you can get an actual preview of what that font looks like. So let's try one of my friends here. Sego UI symbol. Which actually, so here you can see a lot of different types. And then here you can see support for different browser types. So sans serif, and it'll show which ones support them. You can actually see different browser level of support. So which browsers are supporting which things. So there's a ton in here that it adds to editing standard files. What they also are doing with this is making it easy to take advantage of some newer emerging standards. So things like I could add in my scripts, I could add in a CoffeeScript file, for instance. So if I go Web Essentials, add. I think I just need to do add new item. So inside of this now, I could use different types. So where is my CoffeeScript? Oh, there it is. CoffeeScript, big on the left, right? So CoffeeScript is a shorthand syntax for writing coffees or for writing JavaScript. So here I could say, you know, something like, I'll just hop over to CoffeeScript.org. Has anyone here actually like used CoffeeScript in a production application? It's pretty slick. It's kind of the idea is it's a mini language that compiles to JavaScript. So you can do it gives you support for here. I'll just copy in a bunch of junk here. Copy, paste it in there. Now as soon as I save it, it produced some JavaScript for me. So it actually ran this compiler. So here's what I'm typing on the left, and here's what I'm getting on the right. So CoffeeScript is one example. There's also support for Less. A new thing that Microsoft has just announced is called TypeScript. And TypeScript is a typed extensions to JavaScript. So you could take a .js file and rename it to .ts, and it would be valid TypeScript. But then they also allow you to say, this variable or this parameter is an integer, and it'll enforce that then. So it'll actually give you a compiler error if you try and pass a string to an integer variable. And you get the same support here. They've added this with the Web Essentials. They've added that in. So there's a ton more stuff, and you can actually see if you go, on the Visual Studio Gallery. So they do very regular releases of this. And they show, you know, how to use a lot of different things. One thing I didn't show here is they have different browser support, different browser level support. So they'll say, okay, you're using this, you know, Dash WebKit thing. Well, this is supported in these WebKit browsers, or that kind of thing. So, tons of nice features. This is an extension, so you can install it in Visual Studio. No one else on your team needs to use it in order for the code to work. It's just an editor thing, and then you can just disable it or uninstall it if you don't like it. So, but I really recommend that. I especially like Web Essentials because I've emailed them a few times and I've said, you know, I wish I could right-click on some code in HTML and say, please HTML encode this. I said, sure, okay, we'll add that in. It was out in the next release. So, I mean, they really add in features really, really, you know, smart features really quickly. And I believe that's it. It is. It's waiting here, but all it's going to show is a Microsoft slide at the end. I have a few minutes for questions. Do we have any more questions? Yes. Mm-hmm. It has to. So yeah, it would work wherever it's supported. What they've actually done, it's not running a version. It's not running IE10 inside there, but it's using the same code base. So it's using that Chakra JavaScript engine. It's using the layout engine and all that. So, yeah. More questions? Yes.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, you went over the compiling a little quick for me, the minification. So how do I set that up again? And could, after the minification process, could I copy them into a separate folder so that I can deploy them to a CDN or something?
Okay, so there were two questions there, actually. There were two things I showed that had some minification or some compiling. So there was the... towards the end, I showed Web Essentials, and there's like CoffeeScript creating JavaScript. But I also showed bundling and minification earlier. Okay, so bundling and minification, actually, yeah, you can configure that. You can say I would only like this to be. Actually, one of the easiest ways to do this is using Web Essentials. They have support for things, so you can say create bundle. And so with Web Essentials, you can create a bundle and you can minify it. So that's one way. And it actually will create that output file. So it does the kind of nested file thing. So you see that the uncompiled and then the compiled one underneath it. So I think that's probably the best way. There are also, the bundling system is very extensible. So I've seen people have done things where they will shell out to it, or they will do things specifically with bundling that are separate. So, yeah.
Can I just ask the people in the room to use your mics so that the people online can hear the questions?
Okay.
One question.
More questions, yes.
Yes, hi. I was wondering, with the bundling, do they all have to be in the same... Your example showed they were all in the same folder.
They don't... Okay. Sorry to cut you off. They don't have to be all in the same folder. Yeah, so that's a key thing, is you can go, so we'll look at bundle config. So a lot of these, just for simplicity, they're shown here in the same folder, but they don't have to be. So you're actually, you're adding a full path to them. And one other thing I didn't show earlier, but here we've got replacement for like a version. So here we're saying everything, like jQuery versions, all their files. So you can say, if it's jQuery-some-number.js, it's jQuery. And so this is really handy, because I always hated, if I wanted to put the new jQuery in my application, I had to go in and update all my references. So this will automatically update your bundles. But yeah, this is all, you can path it out. You could actually, I've seen people get their JavaScript not from, file system, but for whatever else. So, yeah. Any more questions? Is there support for CDN? I don't know offhand. I do. One good place to look to find more information about that, and I think he did talk about that. There was this ASPConf conference we put on this past summer, and Howard Durking spent an hour, and he went way into depth about how it's built and extensibility. But yeah, a few people have asked about CDN support, so that is something I'd... let me try and look that up, and I can, next time I speak, I can answer that. So.